Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Chantel Dew,
and Jonah Dew
in the house.
Now we are a little bit lower on attendance this evening for obvious reasons, but Kevin and Melissa are definitely going to join us via some Zoom action later in the episode, so stay tuned for them. We did get together tonight and had a good time playing some board games. I know several different ones made it onto the table, and there were several brand new ones, at least for me, that I hadn't gotten to try out. I'm going to save the game that Chantel and I played for a second, and let's let Sarah talk about some of the games that she was playing.
So Jonah and I busted out Stop Thief from Restoration Games. This is an older game from the 70s that has been redone and modernized. It has an app that you can play, so you can do competitive or cooperative. And in the game, the thief is moving around the board, and you are trying to figure out where they're going and catch up to them and capture them.
Yep. I thought it was pretty cool that it had the competitive and cooperative mode. So you, depending on your style of play, you could play however kind of you wanted. So obviously cooperative is together and competitive is, you know, versus the other people that you're playing with. I also like the aspect of that game where you were going to catch the thief more than once. I know sometimes when you're those hidden movement games, it's like a one and done, right? We're trying to find this person and catch them and just like that's it. When you catch them, it's over. But in this game, you catch them a bunch of times. You get money for catching them if you're playing that option. There are also some options that are a little bit harder where you don't use the money and just kind of keep going. So that was fun. And of course, the interaction on the phone make it very 2020, right?
So. That's right. Everyone has their own hand of cards, and you'll play one of them, and they all have different numbers of how many movement you can make. The thieves in the game can move a little bit differently, so the app will tell you each turn, oh, they went to this type of location. There'll be a sound effect that tells you, so there might be a door opening or them breaking through a window or walking inside or walking along a street. And so you can figure out and deduce where they have been based on what order the movements have been in. So figuring that out and then using your cards, you'll play one card. And then at some point, you can use a card in your hand that allows you to pick your cards back up. Otherwise, you have to go through your whole hand. And then you may end up with, you know, a two or a three, which doesn't let you move very far. So you don't want to save those for when it's crucial for you to move a lot of spaces. So it's got some good variability in the difficulty level as well. Like, we played standard mode, which was fine for us. But I definitely want to try it out with much more difficulty in the game, because I could see how it'd be super crazy. There are subways where the thief can jump to a whole nother side of the board, so where you have no idea where they're going. So figuring out from there would be really cool.
You guys did play the cooperative, or you played the competitive?
Yeah, we played the competitive mode. Trying to see if we could get a winner.
So who, yes. Did you get a winner? Did you guys catch him?
Dun, dun, dun.
What?
I did win, but it was kind of by default because the phone we were using for the clues died.
Which was my fault.
You were just ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I was just ahead of when that happened.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. It looks very cool. I'd be interested in trying it out for sure. And I'm definitely up for it, playing it on a difficulty level that's higher. You played two players. Do you feel like it would be a lot easier if there were multiple players hunting down the same guy? Or do you think it'd make any difference?
Well, I think that the thief that you're trying to catch, they've got different difficulty levels. So I think on the version that we played with extra people, it would have been harder to win.
Oh, okay.
But I think that you just need to turn up the thief difficulty depending on the level of players that you have and just what kind of game you're interested in, because like some of the advanced difficulty levels were like they will might go out the window but might come back in the same building.
Oh.
They could, you know, double back, stuff like that, where it didn't have that in the mode that we played. So it was kind of easy to track.
I knew it was a linear.
Yeah, he was like, okay, well, if he went out the door, he's not going back in, where like you can turn it up to where he's more difficult and he might come back in. Or sometimes there were private clues where it told you like exactly where the thief was at that moment. Mm-hmm. So you can like deduce where he is now, like a couple turns later. But I think as you turn up the difficulty, it doesn't give you the private clues, or it just tells you like the first number of the room he's in, or it might tell you two spaces where he could be. So I think you just need to adjust the thief difficulty for your kind of style of play and the people that you're playing with.
Are you recording this just in your head, or is there like a worksheet where you can write
no,
down?
You just have to remember.
Okay, I'm out.
Which most of the, you are allowed, because it is public knowledge, the clues, that the main clues that you get on your turn, the app does have a space, a button that you can push to review everything that you know what this specific thief has done. So you are allowed to do that. Everybody gets to look at it. But you are allowed to look at what clues have been given, and then you can review what clue, obviously, you've been given. The private clues, you can't go back and look at those.
Interesting. So. Chantel and I were also doing some interesting investigating.
Yes.
We had a game called To Hunt a Killer, or maybe just Hunt a Killer, on the table. It's actually like a subscription box game where they send you a different mystery box each month. There's like 12 of them in the game. You are trying to figure out this long overarching story arch to determine who the murderer is, but then in each round you have an individual specific goal that you're trying to achieve. So we played 2 months tonight.
Yes.
The first one we played, we were able to figure out the murder weapon.
Correct.
Which was pretty interesting. You open the box, there's a bunch of like envelopes and cufflinks, and I'm probably spoiling things, but just random clues and tidbits of information that you get, and then you have to read through it all to decipher what pieces of information you can and to figure out the storyline. And it had a very in-depth and pretty interesting story, and you got just enough information in the first game that it kind of sucked you in. But then as we opened up the second story, stuff started to twist and get a little more exciting.
Yeah, it did. And it was really cool because you had just like in the game that you guys were playing earlier today, how you were incorporating your phones and stuff like that. We also had the same ability to scan a QR code and get more information and get tools and resources that we would be able to use towards the game as well. You had things from actual items that were in the game, you know, to letters, handwritten letters, things that we had to decipher,
and then
videos, you know, that we could watch as well. So incorporated a lot of those aspects in there. That was really cool. It made it very, I don't know, kind of like the escape room.
Right, a little bit.
Kind of aspect to it, which was really cool. Made me feel like all the criminal minds and, you know, 2020 stuff that I've been watching, I finally got to put that to work. So that was really cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. There was some ciphers in it as well, which I always do really terrible at it. Fortunately, Brian was playing with us as well, and he was able to kind of jump in and immediately figure out some of those things.
Correct.
Yeah, he definitely pulled us through the second
through
one.
So much.
Yeah.
Definitely have a person in the group that is yeah, can think that way.
Yeah, math whiz and whatever. So he was able to turn things around and figure out pretty cool.
Read in between the lines.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll put together... We may put together a review for it. I'm not sure how many we'll play. But it was definitely neat to pull it out and just the tactile experience. This wasn't one... I think you probably could play this again with other people. You would know the answer, obviously. But we didn't... I don't feel like we destroyed anything. I wrote Correct. On a couple pieces of paper, but I didn't really need to. So you could definitely repackage it. So I've played some escape room in a box types of things where there's no way you're getting all those pieces back in the order.
Yeah, because you might have to fold something a certain way or follow directions that might destroy something.
Right. So far, this was very like, look at the clue, decipher what it is, take the next step. Yeah.
So if you needed notes, you could write them on another piece of paper.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
And at the very end, you know, all we had to do was submit what we thought was the answer. So like for the first one, we had to do what the weapon was and what we thought the weapon was. And it told you very specifically, email this, you know, the answer to this email address, and we'll tell you if you got it correct. And it wasn't something that actually took very long. Probably in 1-2 minutes, we got to respond back whether or not right. our answer was correct.
That was very neat. Because the idea for the storyline is that we're investigators and we're, like, communicating with this person.
Correct, yes.
She's writing us letters and she's replying to the email. So it was actually pretty neat, like, that there was a – obviously, it's a computer and generated and stuff. But it felt like, oh, we really are conversing with this person who's sending us links and hints and clues because of the way they have it set up. So pretty slick. That's interesting. I think you can learn more at huntakiller.com, I think is what it's called. That's definitely what the name of the game is. I don't know if that's the domain name, but you'll definitely find it if you go looking for it. Jonah and Sarah, you guys played one other game tonight as well, which I had a chance to play the other day, Santa Monica from AEG. Tell us what your thoughts were on that.
So in that game, you are building your own little beachfront, and you are adding cards to your tableau, and there are two rows of cards. There's one that's the actual beach along the ocean, and then there is that first main strip of shops along the
boardwalk.
Yeah. And so each card has a different way to score on it. So some of them do. Others may not score, but they may add people to your little town, or they may give you sand dollars that you can spend like currency, and you just keep building along until you have 14 cards in your tableau, and then the game ends and you score. It has super fun little components to it. You have three different kinds of people. There are locals, and locals can move around a little bit more in your town at the end of the game. And then there are tourists. And so some of the locations are specifically tourist traps. So tourists will need to go there. And then there are some that's like the, you know, local little diner that only the locals would know about. So very cool. Has fun art to it. And I enjoyed gameplay.
So, if I'm not mistaken, that game's coming out soon, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So, it's actually, I really enjoyed it. It's kind of my type of game, and the reason I say that is because this game had different ways for you to score, and it was almost too difficult to calculate the other player's scores.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, you don't know who's winning at any time. Therefore, it's my type of game because I love you guys don't know that I'm winning, but I know that I'm winning.
Oh, yeah.
And when we get to the end and we total these scores, you guys will see that I was winning all game, but you didn't know that because it's too hard for you to calculate my score. So, I really enjoyed that. Like, each card that you add to the tableau, whether it be the beachfront or the boardwalk, they all play off the other cards. So you're just trying to combine the cards correctly on your property to score points and combine your symbols and match them up and put people where they need to go. And it was just a really good time. So I really enjoyed Santa Monica.
Yeah, I thought the artwork for it was really fun. One of the things that I actually really liked is that where you're buying the cards from is this like central pool, and you have a front row of cards where you're going to pick one from there pretty much every single turn. You can see the card that's going to get moved into that slot from the previous round, so it allows you to kind of plan ahead and figure out which ones you want. It also gives you that really great moment where, like, every single turn Sarah steals the card right before your turn that you wanted.
That's right.
Oh, so frustrating. But I like that. That's a great experience in the game when, you know, you have that tension of like, oh, no, I needed that one. Fine. What else can I take? And then the game also has this nice little variability thing each round where you've got a couple tiles that allow you different actions in the game, and you spend your sand dollars to take those actions. And it might be things like you can buy two cards on your turn if you spend four sand dollars, or you can buy something from the top row, or you can buy something and move two of your people. And so that little bit of variability every time kind of changes your strategy just a little bit, because sometimes it's way more valuable in the game to have a bunch of sand dollars racked up that you can spend on that kind of stuff. Other times you just kind of take the cards you get and you save your sand dollars to use as points at the end of the game. So yeah, lots of different ways to score. You're right, the complexity was high. I felt like it helped mitigate the AP analysis paralysis that you might have, because you could see, you know, well ahead of your turn what the likely options were that you were going to get. So yeah, felt really smooth, really like light, fun theme. It seemed like the perfect game to just have at your beach house that you rent out to people, and you just leave that one on the table. And
possibly in Santa Monica. Oh, okay.
Very, very possibly. Okay. Very, very possibly. Have you guys played any other games this week? We got to play one other one that I was going to talk about, but what anything else that make it to you guys' tables?
This week, we actually played a game I think we've talked about before. So we played Rival Restaurants earlier this week.
Which I actually liked a lot.
Yeah?
Cool.
Yeah,
kind
I
of,
did.
If you haven't played that one before, it's kind of chaotic, loud, all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's your turn the whole
Sounds
time.
Sounds like my kind of game.
Not my kind of game. But we did play it. It was a good time. It was a good time.
That's because you have to prepare dishes, and Jonah is not about... cooking.
Like
that's the situation.
Not the theme, huh?
I can't even play games that have to be cooking. No, it was a good time. I really enjoyed that. And I don't think that we played anything else this week, even though we have all the time in the world.
Right.
With this social distancing.
Correct.
I think we
only do need to keep 6 feet apart. So yeah, I don't.
It's hard to play games.
It's a large. You got to get a large table.
Yeah. We don't have a big.
We'll get. We'll let you guys.
Throw burrito might be a good one to
there
play.
There you go. Dodgeball and burrito. Sarah and I had the chance to play First Contact. Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty neat little party game. It's kind of like Code Names in reverse, maybe.
Oh,
so
cool.
You've got two people giving clues. You've got people receiving the clues. You are trying to actually, it's themed like with these Egyptian hieroglyphics. And it's like two of you are the alien hieroglyphic god, Egyptian people or whatever. And you're trying to communicate with these lowly humans in order to get them to give you very specific can't remember what the word is, but relics or whatever, gifts that you want to receive. And so you have to give them like language pieces. So they are going to have a grid of cards like in Codenames. They're going to turn cards sideways to define a word concept for you. And then you're going to show them what the symbol for that word concept is. So everybody has to kind of be on the same page. And then after you've helped them establish kind of a vocabulary of words, and the words might be things like big or fast or sharp or alive, and then you write back to them that's those same vocabulary words to describe one specific artifact that you want them to give you. So if I wanted you to give me the pyramid, I might use the big symbol twice and the pointy symbol once, you know, or whatever. And then you have to decipher what is big, big, pointy. Okay, well, there's a dog. No, cats are kind of pointy. Oh, big, big. The pyramid's the biggest thing. That must be what they want. And so you are trying to just decipher what the other person wants. Score tokens. Pretty neat experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed this one. It is some of the cards are difficult to discern what the other team is trying to, or what the other players are trying to communicate between the humans and the aliens. So there are some words in there like bright and
warm,
which are very similar concepts, and same with big and heavy. So something might be big, but might not be heavy. So it's hard to, because they'll rotate all the cards that they think has to do with this. And you might be like, well, I wonder why they didn't pick this one card. So now I'm confused.
I was even like pushing them. I think the word was like fat. I thought that they wanted me to guess the word fast, but they hadn't turned the chariot card sideways. And I was like, chariots are definitely fast. And granted, this chariot doesn't have a horse attached to it. So maybe it's not fast, but oh, like, what are you trying to get me to guess?
Yeah. So there's some interesting moments like that where you're having a hard time communicating. But it's always great when you finally do figure out what the other team was trying to communicate to you. So. Definitely, if you like Code Names, even if you don't like Code Names, this one kind of fixes the downtime that Codenames has, because you're always doing something. You're either writing a clue for the other team. If you're waiting for a clue, you're thinking ahead. Okay, when it's the alien's turn to give a clue, you're going to pick something. And then after that, you have to give information to the aliens. So you're constantly thinking ahead about what you're going to do. So there's hardly ever downtime in the game.
Yeah. If you're bad at Codenames, you might still be bad at this game. But if you enjoy Codenames, but you just think there's too much like waiting for the clue giver to think of a four-word clue and it like takes you 10 minutes, it doesn't have that. Like
it definitely solves.
It's a better uh-oh, I'm getting ready to make a quote. This is dangerous. A better party game than Codenames.
I really enjoy Codenames.
I don't know that it's a Codenames killer because Codenames has a very specific, what's the word for it? Just mechanic that works
well. I would say if you like deduction games, then and Codenames type where you're right, on a team with somebody.
Codenames is a deduction game.
Well, it's... It is, but it's not as, like, it's, you can just go through the game and be like, okay, Apple won, and like, oh, here's the only, you know, word.
I hate those people.
I know.
We have the
Codenames,
just the words, and then we have the one that's pictures.
Uh-huh.
And the one with pictures, some of those drawings are just like, is that? No, it can't be. So we've actually mixed the words the pictures at times to make it more complex. And that has been really fun.
Cool.
And that's like if you're playing it as like a married couple or just even a couple in general, you really get to figure out how the other person thinks.
This is true. Have you guys had a chance to play Codenames Duet yet?
No.
Well, I know what you guys are going to be borrowing tonight. So it's Codenames Cooperative 2-player. So you're trying to help each other get the clues. That's pretty good stuff. And I think it's words and pictures as well. So you can play either way. The cards are double-sided, which is pretty
cool. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, cool stuff.
All right, so thankfully, through the power of technology, the rest of the crew is going to join us for our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
This episode will be talking about six games coming to Kickstarter the week of March 30th, 2020. Kevin, why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, last week I was talking about Frosthaven, but Cephalo Fair Games decided to postpone their Kickstarter launch 1 week because of COVID-19. So let's just talk about a little bit more since I was actually able to play it and was able to do a video recording as well. So you'll be able to check that out on our YouTube channel this week as well. Frosthaven is a new standalone game in sort of the Gloomhaven universe, if you're familiar with that, with It's a co-op adventure game where you're battling enemies. A couple new things that Frosthaven is bringing to the table is not only more scenarios and new characters and new enemies, but also the scenarios themselves are not just going to be about battling enemies. There's new things that you're going to be able to do in the game. There's some mystery that you're going to be able to uncover. One thing that has been hinted at is a book that you're going to find along your way, along your travels in Frosthaven. It's going to be in a different language. And you're going to have to figure out how to decipher that language. And once you do, you're going to find more pages to that book throughout your travels. And it's going to lead you to find new things in the world of Frosthaven. And like I said, I was able to play the game Frosthaven. There was actually three scenarios in the prototype. The first one was just very similar to the base game. The second one, there was a ship that you had to save and things like that, and it was pretty cool. So there's lots of different things that I'm excited about in the world of Frosthaven. So check it out. 100 new scenarios and, like I said, new races, and it's going to be about as big as Gloomhaven was. So I'm expecting it to do well. We'll see how it goes. March 31st on Kickstarter from Cephalo Fair.
Now,
Melissa.
Kevin, did you get to actually play? Did you just play the intro scenario, or have you played deeper into it?
Just played the intro scenario. Yep.
So I'm just curious, since we're just hypothesizing anyway, nobody really knows. I'm really curious to find out how the two worlds connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this theory.
Tell me your theory.
I'm just going to make it up as I go. I have this theory that they're obviously like really connected, same universe. And I think one is either in the future of the other or in the past of the other.
Oh, what no, it's during this. Idea? It's the same time-ish. Think of it like I think Isaac was talking to someone about it being like, think
the Marvel
of
universe.
Think, yeah, Marvel universe. Think of it as Gloomhaven, like Thor and Frosthaven like Captain America. So same universe, same time. Right.
Okay. I hope there's more to it. I hope that it wows me.
Okay.
I want there to be like this language was written, you know, thousands of years ago. Oh, wait, it was actually written during Gloomhaven or something interesting like that.
Okay. Yeah. That'd be cool.
Hopeful. We'll see.
Melissa, going to you.
Queen Games is potentially bringing Winter Kingdom at the end of March. This is designed by Donald X. Vaccarino, who is well known for designing Dominion. And this game is for 2 to 4 players. It plays in about 45 to 60 minutes. And it has a lot of variability in the game. There are map tiles that are double-sided that you're going to randomly arrange. There are also going to be scoring conditions that you put out and an economy card and a twist card. And the combination of all those things is going to be different every single game. So how you earn money and what the scoring goals are. So interesting how the game will be set up that way. On your turn, you're going to be placing houses onto terrain that is depicted on a card that you draw. You're also going to be purchasing cards and activating cards that are going to give you abilities. And there's not a ton more information out about it now, but it is a solid designer, a solid publishing company. So definitely check out the Kickstarter to see more information about Winter Kingdom. Ryan, you have something?
Wait, Ryan's here too?
Yeah, Katie and I are both here. We want to talk about Planet Unknown.
Cool. Yes.
So coming March 31st, if all pans out, is Planet Unknown. It is a polyomino drafting and placement game for 1 to 6 players.
From Adam's Apple Games.
Yes. And it has some, looks like some really neat components with it. It's going to have a lazy Susan that's divided like a pie. And you can only take polyominoes from the section of pie that's facing you. And you're going to be building up this planet. Everybody has asymmetrical abilities, and you're going to be building up a planet, and you're trying to score based on how full you're able to and how well you're able to place your polyomino resources on your planet surface. There's also going to be a lot of engine building with the different resources that you build up. And it's interesting because they said they've tried to design this game so that there's no downtime for any players. So everything is a simultaneous play. So actually Ryan and I will be doing a preview video for this game. So check that out. It should be out fairly soon after this podcast.
Yeah, this is from the same publisher as the Swordcrafters game, so we expect great things.
I thought it was. I thought that name sounded familiar. I was like, "Is that the Swordcrafters one?" That was definitely a unique game, wasn't it? Because you were like building a 3D sword.
Yeah. So the Lazy Susan is what really drew me into it. I want to see how that works out.
Cool. Looking forward.
So I actually
probably more games that could use a Lazy Susan.
Right. Well, that's a for
Evan
sure statement.
So they just play all games with a Lazy Susan.
True. Our kitchen table has a built-in Lazy Susan, so that works really nice for a lot of games, except when they have huge boards.
Then we have to go to the pool table.
Will, what
first,
do you have?
First world struggles. So I actually did get to peek at this game, the one you were just talking about, at Gamma. They had it out set up on a table. I got a really quick overview of it. It looks really cool. It didn't necessarily remind me of like Terraforming Mars, but it has a little bit of that feeling, it seemed like, because you've got this grid board. You got a lot of stuff you're building onto it. A lot of things affect other things. And it was way prettier, so hopefully it'll do great. I'm actually looking at the game Mantis Falls from Distant Rabbit Games. This is a 2-3 player deduction secret identity game. It looks pretty interesting, though, in that just from the – so the description for the game sounds cool. It's a cooperative game where you are cooperating sometimes, and it's got this like film noir 1940s vibe going on. You're living in this town, and you've witnessed this I don't even know what it is. They don't say something terrible. And now people are hunting you for that information. And the game setup looks a little bit like Codenames again. We talked about First Contact earlier. In this game, you've got like a grid of cards out on the table, and you have secret identity and secret missions and secret goals that you're trying to achieve. Everybody has different like health amounts, so you don't even know how much it takes to kill another player in the game. And it just, it seems very mysterious, modular board, a very built out storyline to it. The art style for it is kind of like, old, I don't know what type of paper you call that, but like coffee stained paper with typewritten words on it, but well done. Like I've seen that style done poorly before, and this actually like looks really solid. So don't know a whole lot of the details about it. 2-3 player, 60 to 90 minute game. That's pretty long for a social deduction type of game. And the description says that it will take you a long time. Like you'll have to talk through different situations and circumstances and make decisions. And it sounds like a pretty thinky game. So I don't know. That one looks interesting. Check out Mantis Falls. Sarah, what are you looking at?
Coming March 31st is Stop the Train from designer Brendan Mills. This is a semi-cooperative game that has some social deduction in it, just like what Will was talking about. You have some hidden roles and some bluffing in it, and you are on a train racing across the tracks. The board is actual train tracks, and you'll have a train figure that will move. There are some splits in the track, so you may end up going different directions. And if you come to different points on the train tracks, different actions will be able to be taken. But you are trying to figure out who the saboteur is trying to take down the train. And so in the game, you'll be trying not to crash at the end of the track. So trying to figure out and stop whoever it is that is derailing the train and try and get it done before you crash. So that
is Keanu Reeves in there? Or no, wait, which one's Speed 2? Aren't they on a train? I can't remember which one is which.
One of them, they're on a boat, I think.
Boat? Which one's the train? Or is that one Steven Seagal? There's too many movies that...
of a train that's going to crash.
There's a lot of movies like that.
You have a new like the commuter one that was
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, that was pretty. Have you guys watched that one?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was actually a pretty good one. I liked that so much that I was watching it with some guy friends, and I was like, Melissa, you got to watch this one too.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I wonder if this game feels a little bit like that storyline in the movie. I don't know. I'm just making that up, but
interesting.
Yeah, but that is Stop the Train, coming from designer Brendan Mills. And then Will and I have one more to talk about. Also coming March 31st is Wolfenstein the board game.
So one of my, I mean, the first video game that I ever played forever, over and over and over hundreds of times. Really cool IP. I have not played the most recent video game, but Wolfenstein the board game is coming from Bethesda.
Bethesda and also Archon Studios.
Yes, multiple peoples. And features all of the great IP that you would want, all the great art, all the great guns, all the same terminology, all the baddies. It's a dudes on a map hex-based game where you're playing cooperatively as a team of four characters. So it's a 1-4 player game, but you're going to control four heroes either way. And you'll be spending your action points to use your sweet weapons to take out bad guys. And it's, I think, got 10 scenarios with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and the scenarios build on each other a little bit in that
there's kind of an overarching storyline that your character will be following. Your characters will be following through the 10 scenarios.
Yeah, it's definitely the video game. Like, you're on the first floor, yep, and you're learning to use your gun. You're shooting, yep, the bad guys. You're working your way through the castle, finally getting to Hitler at the end of the game, where you take him out and you prove that you are tougher than death incarnate. We have a preview video that we actually just shot for this. We've played several scenarios from it now. I really enjoyed it. I don't usually, this is definitely like a Ryan game.
Yes. I don't normally enjoy games where it's like a character moving through and there's like dice rolls, and half the time I roll poorly, and so my character just wastes turns. I didn't feel that way in this. I felt like I was still accomplishing something the whole time. Like, I didn't.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are talking about, like, it's more like a Zombicide, like, where, right, you're cooperatively, yes, dungeon crawl, working, yep, together.
Yes. Minis.
I definitely do not like Zombicide. That is not one of my favorite games, although I enjoyed Wolfenstein. So I don't know what that says.
But. Right. I think some of it is just the IP, because in truth, like, the mechanics were pretty straightforward. Spend your action points, upgrade your guns, you know, roll dice against monsters. But it did, we did have a good time with it. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it was just the IP or what it was.
I think part of it was this game, the objective is very clear. You have these three or four things that you must complete for the objective, and you really have to work quickly to do that. I feel like Zombicide was like, oh, let's go over here and do this, and oh, I guess I'll go back to this room. Like, I don't know. The threat level was obvious, and you needed to use your character's abilities well and their weapons, extra abilities, to try and defeat everything that you needed to complete the mission.
So it's less open world feel than Zombicide.
Yes, I would say so, only because the map is not very open. It's small rooms and tight corridors. So there is the possibility that you can quickly become overwhelmed with enemies if you're not careful. Yeah. But I don't know. And yeah, their difficulty, well, level.
It sounds
too.
Like, it sounds like a game that we need to take home and try too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys would definitely enjoy it, and I would love to hear how different you think it is. I feel like it's actually pretty straightforward. I did like that several video game elements were included in it. And I know this happens in other board games as well, but like, you've got the secret passageways that you can, you know, push to unlock and get cool stuff in. And actually, one of the scenarios in the game is, there is like a threat level that you have to win the game in a certain amount of time. And there are doors in the game that are only unlocked during certain threat levels. So you can only get through this door on odd numbered threat levels. So you have to kill a bad guy to be able to raise the threat level, to be able to open the door to get through. And if you don't get through the door before the next threat level, then the door locks again. There were some scenarios where you had to have like buttons that you had to activate. And so you had to send all four heroes, yeah, in different directions.
Yeah, so they all have to stand on the button for the mission to accomplish. So that's very much like a video game.
Right. It felt like I was playing the video game. You know, certain characters can move much faster and further than others. BJ Blazkowicz, the main dude, is the only guy who can like shoot two guns at the same time. So I played him every time. And
it's got super cool minis. The minis are, there's a lot of mechs and things for the minis. So they look pretty good.
Yep. It was fun stuff. So check out Wolfenstein, the board game, if you are into that IP and if you enjoy mini games. And I think that pretty much wraps up Kickstarter Conniption. Everything's a little bit slower right now with the Corona thing. I know that we've been playing more games as a family. Playing First Contact was lots of fun, trying to play that together. Have you guys had the chance to play any fun stuff this week?
Melissa and I have. We were able to play Exit, the Haunted Roller Coaster.
Haunted Roller Coaster?
Yes, it's from one of the newer lines of the Exit games. So these are escape room games. The Exit ones from Cosmos, usually you have to basically destroy the game while you're playing. And this one had places that you need to cut cards with scissors and things like that. So unless you go to great lengths, it is a one-time use game.
Yeah, you have a bunch of cards, and then you have a booklet that you're going through. In many Exit games, you sort of have this, I don't know, 8 to 10 page booklet that have a lot of clues or pictures or things that you need to decipher in order to continue through the game, but you don't really know what page where it's going to give you what information, and you're sort of gathering these cards that are giving you more clues. Haunted Roller Coaster is more of a beginning level game, and you actually start on page one, and you're basically going through the booklet one page at a time, and the game won't let you really go forward until you've solved that riddle on a given page, which I thought was different than all the other exit games. And I think the reason they're doing it is because they want it to be like a beginning level escape room type game for players people have never played this type of game before.
Right. We've played many of the exit games, unlock games, and this one was rated level 2 out of 5. I know we've played at least level 4 exits before, and this was noticeably easier than those. So I think they hit the target of trying to do it more entry level. We didn't need to use any hints. We were able to solve all of the
puzzles.
I would
even say this is a level 1. I know this is level 2 in the box, but to me, I thought I had another 2 that we've played. I know we've played 3 and 4 level, but this was, to be a level 1. They probably should have just put level 1s. If it's supposed to be an entry-level game, I would say we never used any hint, and I would say all the other exits, we've used hints before.
Yeah, and I would say that the biggest thing, like you mentioned, was just going one puzzle at a time instead of kind of being overwhelmed, looking through the whole book and wondering, do I need a piece of information from page 2 and a piece of information from page 5. Do I have all the information that I need to solve the puzzle?
Most of the time you don't even know.
Mm-hmm. So it was still enjoyable, but definitely more entry level.
Have you guys played any level 5? Does that even exist?
I don't know if it exists yet.
Yeah, I have to check the boxes. I think we still have all the empty boxes to see if any of them were that level. I know some of the level 4s were pretty difficult.
I will tell you, level 4 was too hard for me personally.
And sometimes it's the physical components of the game, like realizing what do I need to do with this piece of paper. I think I need to fold it, but how do I need to fold? You know, sometimes it's the I know how to solve the puzzle or what the puzzle wants me to do, but physically I'm having trouble doing it.
Some of it, I will say with the level 4, there was a couple times I was like, this didn't translate well because it's a German company. And I felt like Melissa said, there was something like, we know what we need to do. It's not giving us the answer that we think should happen. But like later on, we figured out, I think it was just a
lost in translation type of thing.
But overall, level 4s are definitely, they do rate them pretty well. Level 4s are definitely hard.
We haven't actually opened it up yet, but we actually just got Theft on the Mississippi, which is a new exit game. It's rated 3 dots
perfect,
out of 5.
3 is probably perfect, yeah.
We may have to give that a shot in the next day or so, unless you guys need to, unless it's like, if we're going to ruin it and you don't get a chance to play it, then I don't know. I don't want to steal your experiential joy.
I don't know. You're welcome to play it. You'll just have to do your own video then.
or we could trade. We have another level 2 that we could trade you.
Ooh, there we go. Now we're talking.
Yeah, well, level 2
for you. What
do you say?
Well, I think I could handle
a 3. You
can
handle a 3 level?
I think I can handle a 3.
Okay.
That's funny. We also got to play me for the first time ever, Castles of Burgundy. So,
what?
That's my first time, Kevin?
First time, yeah. Castle of Burgundy.
One of my favorites.
Tantrum Con last year, I played one round for Katie. I don't know if she remembers this or not.
I do, yeah. Because we won.
Yeah. You did win or you lost? Oh, okay.
I was like, so they threw me in. I was like, oh, dice worker placement game. It can't be too bad. Katie had to go run and I think it maybe helped Farron or something like that. And I was like, I can handle one round or two rounds or something. And so I was like, I think I see what Katie's trying to do here with her strategy. So I just kept doing her strategy and it worked out well. I had never played a full game before and it took me over a year to play the game for reals. So.
I'm sorry, Kevin. That's such a good game. I'm sorry it took you that whole long, all that time to get back to it.
Yeah, well, we just recently got it in a trade. So we didn't own the game. And I'm not sure if we really knew too many people who have it either.
Yeah, does anybody else actually own it in Tantrum House?
Yeah, I don't own it. We played it with some friends.
The card version.
Oh, yeah, we do own the card version.
It's very similar, but it's with cards. Is that the one that takes up the whole table?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
You might as well just have the board. I guess the box is small. That's the only difference.
I really, really liked it. I just personally think games have come so much farther now than whenever this game came out.
Definitely a classic at this point.
Yeah, board game. Like it felt to me like, oh yeah, this was a game that I probably would have played back in the early 2000s, late 90s or something like that. I don't know when it came out. But I love the board game, the mechanics of the game, like the dice placement aspect. I love dice placement aspects in games.
It came out in 2011.
Okay. Yeah. It feels older than
9 years ago.
It feels older than 9 years, actually. It feels like a Puerto Rico type game. I mean, it came.
It does, yeah.
Aaliyah is a maker of Puerto Rico. But anyway, I hate the graphic design. Despise it.
So does everybody else.
The illustrations.
I think that's a common complaint on that one.
I know that they have.
The color is burgundy. I mean,
the new version.
I've heard that the new version isn't any better.
Really? That seems like one of the things they should have updated.
It's not awesome.
They should make it awesome if they're going to redo it.
I do agree with that.
Instead of an A+.
Now, here's the thing. I've actually heard they're going to make a new version of Castle of Burgundy and isn't they doing a Castle of Tuscany too or something?
Well, that's a standalone game, Castles of Tuscany.
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, I liked it.
Well, that's just don't get people all like hearts aflutter if that's just a rumor about a new version.
Tell us rumors.
I don't know. I could just be speaking incorrectly, but
the coronavirus talking.
It could be. Could be.
Oh, please.
Well, Castles of Tuscany 2020.
Yeah, we knew that was coming.
Oh, okay, what were you saying?
I thought there was a third version of Castle of Burgundy, like a super deluxe version or a new version, so because of all the complaints people had. But maybe I just dreamt it.
So. Sounds like a good dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ryan and Katie, did you guys get to play anything?
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of like online playing.
Yeah,
we've been using Roll20 to do some. Some you guys broke up. Stuff.
We missed that part.
Okay. We've been using some online resources to play. And Roll20 is one of the resources we've been using to do some tabletop RPG stuff.
Yeah, cool. It's been really exciting because my RPG group normally meets like once every month or every other month. But because everybody is stuck in their homes, we've met like once a week. So
it's been
super fast paced. And I also got to play a little bit with Liam for the first time on Roll20 doing our Star Wars RPG. And that was fun. Did that a little bit tonight.
And I peeked over his shoulder. He seemed like he was like totally had it figured out.
He did. He caught on much faster than a lot of adults do.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a new system for me because you can do several different systems in Roll20. I hadn't tried the Star Wars system in there and how it worked. So he was actually catching on to some of the things before I did, which was fun. And then Katie has spent a lot of time playing with her friends on Board Game Arena.
Yeah. We signed up there. It was something that one of my friends found as an alternative to meeting in person, because she hosts a regular game night, and she just asked who wants to try it out with me, and I was like, oh yeah, sure, I'll do it. So we had a group of six people on there playing games together. You can choose to play with people you know, setting up private games, or you can set up. Or you can set it up so that you just have a game that you want to play and you join, you know, a group of people who are already, you know, waiting to play that game as well. I've had a really good time. I've played with people from literally all over the world. That's been really fun.
You can do a live video and audio if you want to. Most people don't do that with random strangers. but there is a chat function available as well. I've been playing a lot of Hanabi just because I found that to be very fun with absolutely no table talk, because you can't see the person. You can't see them like doing their like eyebrows up and down at you. Like, yeah, like Will does all the time.
I
like,
enjoy
big,
this.
Big grin and nodding that. When you're like choosing a card, you know,
have you even won a single game?
Oh yeah, actually.
What? Way to go.
I found there's an entire culture there of people who all know what it means when somebody does a certain thing to give us a clue. Yeah. I was okay. Like, wow, this like worldwide culture of board games has come together and solidified Hanabi clues. So
it's interesting. Cheating online.
Right. Without talking. Tell me the system. Tell me. I want to know.
Sometimes the system doesn't work out as well as you hope it would, or people don't understand what you're trying to say even then. But like, apparently I didn't know this going in, but clicking, if you get a clue that's just a color clue, you're supposed to choose the card on the furthest left side. If you get a number clue, they want you to choose the one on the farthest right. Like I said, that doesn't always work out, but it pretty much does. So I've been really surprised at how well that we can do without any talking or communicating at anything other than just the clues.
So wait, they give you a clue that your far left card is blue and you're supposed to play the number on the far right side?
No. So if you're given a clue of multiple blues, for example, they want you to play the one on the furthest left.
Okay, I understand now.
So if you're given the clue of multiple of the same number, they want you to choose the one on the right. But like I said, it doesn't work out like 100% of the time.
Interesting. And the site does tell you if more than one person is playing from the same IP address. So you can see if some of your teammates are cheating because they may be playing across
and telling each other what they're. Oh, interesting!
I did have one situation where there were two people from the same IP, and they made some scary accurate guesses on their last turns.
Did you guys win though?
That never happens at our house.
It actually wasn't a great game. Like in the end, it wasn't. Like we did a stellar job with that one, but
I think Katie actually gets more into the online Hanabi than she does in real life, because in real life you can't table talk, but here she is, she doesn't have a mic or a camera on with these strangers, so I'll be, you know, fiddling with my computer, and meanwhile Katie's over there like, oh, what are you thinking? What in the world?
Yeah. I did play a game where I told somebody that they had two fives in their hands, and then they discarded both of them.
Yeah. She's like, what? This guy just discarded another five. What is he thinking? Another five. He has one more five. Oh, nobody's doing. Nobody's giving him any clues. He discarded the last five.
Bad. That guy single-handedly ruined three of the colors by discarding the only fives in the deck. This is after he discarded the first one. I say he. I don't know if it was a man or a woman. After he discarded the first five, I immediately went on the chat and said, there's only one five of each color. You know, just like, hey, heads up in case you were thinking there were more. Well, then he discards the other five. I was like, this guy is throwing the match. This is annoying.
To Katie's defense, though, I have seen her yell just as loud at me, so
that is also true.
It's not only online.
I don't know what it is. It's not road rage. It's like board game. Ooh, online
we need
rage.
We need to coin a term right now.
I don't know. I do yell at the computer occasionally on this.
Web rage? Web rage already has to be a word, right?
Surely it is. I don't know. But I've been fantastic. Having a good time with that. So,
well, cool. it sounds like we're all having lots of good times and making the best of our situations. I know that it is quite handy to have a giant board game collection right now. We've been lending some games out to folks to let them have some fun with it, and wiping them down, of course, when they come back. And yeah, just really enjoying the time that we've been able to spend together as a family. I think that pretty much wraps up our episode, though. Sounds like everybody's having a great time. Hopefully, we'll all be able to be in one place again here soon. We did just cancel our monthly game night, so there will be no last Monday of the month this month, but hopefully things will turn around quick and we can all be together hanging out and playing some board games come April.
Oh, and did you guys mention that we're postponing our Kickstarter campaign already?
We definitely did mention that on our last episode, and we haven't announced a new date, so yeah, in case anybody did miss it, we are not launching it quite yet.
But you can still support us on our tantrumhouse.com website.
That's true. We do have some of our promo cards from previous years still available at tantrumhouse.com/shop/something else. I don't know. You'll find it. But what's the latest, Kevin? Any new news on additional secret promos or cool things? We haven't talked about those in a while.
I've not been contacting companies right now because it's probably not a good idea to ask them for things when they're probably struggling. So, yeah.
Maybe true. We do have quite a few already in the collection, right, though. So whenever we do launch, lots of cool things for you guys to check out.
We do, you know, thoughts and prayers to a lot of board game companies, because I've heard of a few that are saying, I can't sell games because my distributor is shutting down. Another company is just like, you know, for the health and safety of all our people, we're just going to be staying in our homes and just continue to play test and push off releases to later, you know. Anyway. There's lots of changes for the board game industry. We'll see how Kickstarter does the next few months. But anyway, yeah.
This is probably the time to launch that print and play that you've always been thinking about. So I'm sure there's – what are the sites for that? Like,
I don't know if GameCrafter is running still. I'm not sure if that's a type of business that's considered essential to keep
– Well, I would assume it's mostly online, so – Oh, well, GameCrafter is the publisher. What's the company where you can post them online? Is that GameCrafter as well?
Mm-hmm.
You can post your prototypes and things and then allow people to print and play from there. So options, I'm
but
sure.
But there's plenty of places on BoardGameGeek where you can have your print and play available.
That's
as
true.
Well.
Yep, we actually had that for our Hadal project for a while before we pulled it down. Well, I don't know if it was actually on BoardGameGeek.
Once you knew it was going to be published.
Right. But, yeah, by the way, we saw some ads for the Hadal project on BoardGameGeek, which is kind of cool for the Time Story scenario. So I guess you can buy it. Maybe. I don't know if you can buy it or not. Go to your – call your local game store and buy it, and they'll give it to you and not play it there.
Right. They'll hand it to you at the back door, and you can take it home.
No, well, that's another thing. We actually went to – Melissa stopped by our boardwalk. Shout out to one of our series sponsors. And, you know, they're surviving right now, but we bought a game to help support them. And I know a lot of local game stores are going to be struggling the next couple of weeks. So,
yeah, it seems like now would be the time to buy them. Just don't play them there. Go get one and take it home. And it's a win-win.
I know some are offering curbside delivery. So if you call in, you can give them a credit card number and purchase them. And they can have them waiting for you when you drive up.
There you go.
Sounds like a plan. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us for yet another episode. We'll look forward to talking a little bit more next week. And everybody keep on playing games.
Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.